that Pastor Mark sparked in me on Sunday. John chapter 3, verse number 22. I told him tonight, I said, are you sure? Because this is a little weird. I'm sure y'all expected nothing less, right? Thank you, Miss Frieda. We like a little weird thrown in every once in a while. I'm being silly. I don't mean to be silly. I do believe that I've heard something from God, and I believe that it'll be something that'll feed you. Something that will elevate your mind as well as your spirit. I think that it's something that will help us to come to a different place as we are crying out for more. As we are needing more. As our souls and our spirits are yearning for more. How are we getting there? How do we go to the next place? How do we move on? And I'm wondering if maybe this isn't a key that Pastor's been talking about. I just did not know that all this was there, and I've been digging this week, and I want to share with you some things that I found. Chapter 3 of John, the book of John, verse number 22. And after these things came Jesus and his disciples into the land of Judea, and there he tarried with them and baptized. And John also was baptizing in Aenon near Salem, because there was much water there. It was a very spiritual reason that he was baptizing. There's a lot of water. And they came and they were baptized. For John was not yet cast into prison. Verse number 25. Then there arose a question between some of John's disciples and the Jews about purifying. And they came unto John and said unto him, Rabbi, he that was with thee, talking about Jesus, beyond the Jordan, to whom thou bearest witness, behold, the same that you baptized, and all men have come unto him. John answered and said, a man can receive nothing except it be given him from heaven. Ye yourselves bear witness that I said, I am not the Christ, but that I am sent before him, the Christ. John is still talking, and he says, he that hath the bride is the bridegroom. But the friend of the bridegroom, which standeth and heareth him, rejoiceth greatly because of the bridegroom's voice. This is my joy, therefore is fulfilled. He, again, talking about Jesus, must increase, but I must decrease. So tonight I want to talk a little bit about the thought process behind this phrase, he must increase, but I must decrease. We take it for granted that John was just kind of saying, we have to serve him, and I'm going to take a back seat because he's taking over from here. But what if I were to tell you that this phrase meant something much more to the folks that John was speaking? And I really didn't know this. So let's go to class tonight. For just a moment, let's dig a little bit into the thinking of the time and why this is more of a key phrase than we really know. Is that okay? So, first of all, we have to remind ourselves what time we're living in. And can I remind you, I'm not making a judgment, I'm just reminding you of the time we live in. I really don't have a judgment about it because I understand it. But I remind you, we're living in a time where in our society, I'm not even just talking about the world, because we don't really live, we live in the world, but America is not part of the world in that we don't see the same things that other people on the planet see. We are limited in our exposure and always have been. I mean, think about it. We've always been made fun of because we expect other people to learn our language even when we go to their countries. Don't you speak English here? True or false? And we expect them to understand us more than we have taken time to understand them, only because it is something that has been birthed into us. And part of that was a survival mentality, because we were having to make a nation out of a great deal of refugees, a great deal of people who needed a lot of things. And so we were hyping people up to believe that you live in the best country in the world, even when it wasn't true. And right now we're seeing that set on a similar stage, where we have one person speaking out of one side of their mouth saying that let's make America great again. And then we have somebody saying, oh, that's an insult. America's always been great. Who are you to say it's not great? And it doesn't matter even the slogans that they're using. If we could investigate their lives and look at the integrity in their lives, wouldn't that be a much better thing to discuss than the promises and the things that they're saying? But I digress. Again, our society has taught us that let's give a trophy to everybody so that everybody gets the same praise. Right? Kill them with kindness. You cannot, and I have been a proponent of this, you cannot hurt somebody by saying nice things to them, right? Build them up, make them feel good. This is the kind of culture that we have built, created, and become a part of. Not so back in this time. Can you go ahead and put up the first slide? There was an idea that was very prevalent in the time that we're writing or we're reading about, that this conversation that we just read took place. And they didn't believe that everybody should get a trophy. And again, I'm not a proponent either way or the other. I understand both sides. I'm not trying to sell anything. I'm trying to help us understand this passage, because I think it holds a deeper truth that we need to unlock and latch on to. So this concept that you see on the screen is called limited good. It is a little complex, but it's kind of interesting. Somebody who believed in limited good, and we're going to get into a definition and talk about it a little bit more, but somebody who believed in limited good would not say, give your child a time out. They might not encourage you to spank your child either, but the way you treat your child should be completely dependent upon what the child deserves and nothing more. Because if you reward a child or an adult with anything more than they deserve, you're robbing that reward from someone else. So can we go to the next screen? So the idea of limited good is a theory that's commonly held in traditional societies that there is a limited amount of good to go around. Now, again, our society, we run out of money, we just print some more, right? Why are you laughing? I'm being serious. That's what they do. They run out of money. They warm up the presses. But the concept of limited good was that there's a finite amount of money in the world, a finite amount of gold, a finite amount of praise in reality. This is what they taught. A finite amount of honor. Honor. A finite amount, a limited supply. And that if you used that, took that for yourself, or gave it to someone who was unworthy, you were actually giving someone else's rewards, someone else's blessings, someone else's rightful possessions away. Because there was only so much to go around, and they would never get that again. It's kind of an interesting idea. Now, you and I know that there's no limit to the number of times we can say good job to our kids. But they held that if you praised one child over another, you were actually robbing the other child because they might have been more worthy. And if you're not careful, and if you actually think about it in psychology, if you spend your time giving in to one child and you neglect another, you actually do cause a deficit. Thank you, Mama. I heard that. If you spend all your time over here with this group and you neglect this group, you are actually causing a deficit. You are leaving them without. And they develop attitudes. How many of you have ever felt like you were overlooked? How many of you felt like you deserved recognition, honor, praise, and you didn't get it? Somebody else got it. Anybody? Okay, that's what I'm talking about. Somebody else took what was yours when they really didn't deserve it. That's the thinking and the idea here. It's not only for material goods. It's not only for money. It's not only for wealth. It's not only for possessions. It's also dealing with honor and glory. Why do you think David would not touch Saul? Because he was taught there's only so much. And if I touch the anointed, doesn't that give that saying that we read in the Bible over and over and over? Touch not mine anointed and do my prophets no harm. Doesn't that give it a new kind of idea? God is saying, don't you do it. Because my hand is on them and I have blessed them. Who are you to bless somebody else or to take away from what I've given them? I'm the one that's given them. Who do you think that you are to come along after the fact? Ooh, do you understand what I'm saying? It's an interesting idea. And that's why when I saw this, something happened inside me. So I want to keep going. It's a limited good, the theory that's commonly held. So this is what John was talking about. Let's keep going. The next one. In other words, the amount of land, money, etc. available is held to be finite. It's limited. So every time one person profits, another person loses. See, that's not what's built into our head. We are taught the art of the win-win. Right? What's a win-win? Brother, it's a win-win. Everybody wins. Oprah, you're going to get one, and you're going to get one, and you're going to... Everybody gets one. That's what we have developed in our society. This spoiled attitude. Everybody, but I deserve it. I would hear people come in my office week after week, month after month, and say, but I deserve to get money from the government. And I'd say, I'm not questioning your right or whether or not you deserve it. Unfortunately, you don't meet the requirements under the law, so I can't give it to you. I took all emotion, and not because I was feelingless, but because that's how you have to deal with it. There's no. But this is telling us that it's not true. That if you profit, someone else somewhere else loses. I don't know if that's true or not. I don't know. That's something we have to work out for ourselves. But what I'm trying to show you is that that is what John believed in his heart as he was writing. I must decrease. First he said, he must increase. I must decrease. This is the thinking behind what he was saying. So let's keep going just for a little bit. Can we look at the next one? Is this the last one that I have? Okay. This is, so we're going to talk about some examples, and then we're going to be just about finished. And we'll talk about how it applies. But let's look at some examples. Let's see what I'm talking about. Think about this. You go to Esau. Genesis chapter number 27, I'm not going to read it, but that's where it's found, verses number 30 through 40. We see that Jacob and his mom have cooked up a plan. You'd never do anything like that, right? Jacob and his mom have cooked up this plan to deceive Isaac. If there are enough blessings to go around, why on earth does he need to do this? We would just say, it doesn't make any sense. Just bless them both, right? That's our thinking. That's our mentality. But that's not the way God intended for this blessing to work. So instead, we see these two connivers, one being deceitful liar, teaming up together to say, I need this blessing. This blessing is something that I cannot live without. In fact, I want it so bad that I am willing to give up my integrity, everything about myself that is the last bit of purity that I have, I'm willing to trade it just to get this blessing. And the amazing thing is, even after we go in and we see that Esau returns after that Jacob has been blessed, Esau returns and Isaac recognizes him after the fact. Think about this. Think about this. After he understands what has happened, Isaac is so upset, but he still understands that he cannot bless him. Esau says, but Father, please bless me. Father, please. He can't. There is only one blessing, and it's already been given out. Have you only one blessing, Father? Esau says, and Isaac has to say, yes. I only had one. Instead, Esau receives a curse. If you look earlier in Genesis, I'm sorry, if you look in Exodus, the next story would be throughout the first part, the first several chapters, where Moses, is developing as a young man, and he somehow gets esteem from the people and gets esteem from the leaders, and somehow something happens that they like him, and Pharaoh doesn't like that, and it feeds down in 40 years later when he comes and stands in front of him. He's not going to give in. There's something that was going on between the two of them. One of them had to win and one of them had to lose. There was something in between the two of them. It was not both. It was one or the other. Judges chapter number 7. I wanted to point this one out. This is a really good example. And it's an example that God Himself uses. And I think it is so appropriate for us. Gideon versus God. Now, it's not that Gideon was trying to be equal to God. But God said, you can't take your entire army and defeat the other army. It's not going to happen. The Midianites could succumb to you. They could be overtaken by you. So I'm not going to let you take your whole army and go. Instead, I want you to whittle it down. And he whittles it down to 300. Because in God's mind, if he had not done that, if he had not made Gideon reduce his forces and reduce the odds, then someone could come back and say, well, that wasn't really a triumph of God. And God even says himself, the people are too many for me to give them into your hand, because Israel will vaunt themselves against me, saying, my own hand has delivered me. Do you hear those words? Do you hear those words? There are too many of you. The odds look too good in your favor. And if I let you go about your business the way you're going about your business, it's easy for you to say, look at what we did. You remember that song we used to sing? Look what the Lord has done. Look what my church has done. Doesn't have the same ring. And yet, there are many times where, if we're not careful, the glory does not go to the one who deserves the honor and the praise. But he says he is so jealous of the honor and glory. Not because there isn't plenty of honor and glory to go around, but because if we're not careful, think about it, in our society, we do not want to lower ourselves and lower our standards and come down and bend our knees. Instead, we want to raise up whatever is standing next to us to our level. Do you hear me? Or we want to be raised up to theirs. Wow. He must increase. I must decrease. So, it wasn't exactly Gideon versus God. It was the idea that they could not do it without him, that he was not willing to let them see. How many times in our lives have we encountered that experience, that moment where There's no doubt in our mind if it had not been for God. Do you understand what I'm saying? And so my question is, this generation who has every technology under the sun, who has every medication under the sun, again, they don't have to pray for healing because they just take a pill. They don't have to come and spend hours in agony at the altar because they got something else that they can work it out or get their mind off of it. Oh, I know I'm preaching better than you talking back. So we don't understand why in times past we had the winds of God moving through and we had the waves of glory that would come and move over us time and time again. But look back and think it's because we would have the saints of God who would stand up and would say, I have no doubt in my mind there was no grocery in the house, there was no morsel of food, but behold, there was a knock at the door, and somehow God provided. I had no money, I had no way to pay that bill, but don't you know, at just about the right time, but we don't have to worry about that, we go get another credit card. Oh, he's going to preach about that. Well, okay. He must increase. Do we have to have the other one though? Let's just stop there. Can we just cut it? It's a good idea. Let's just cut that. I must decrease out. Last one that I wanted to look at. David versus Saul. And then we're going to go back to John chapter 3. David was returning to Saul from slaying the Philistines. If you read in 1 Samuel chapter 18. Saul was happy. Chet. I mean, Saul was as happy as Saul could be. He was mildly pleased. How's that? Until. What I'm trying to pull out here is that we may live in a society where everybody gets a trophy. We may live in a society where everybody needs praise, but There really is a group of people who sometimes feel like they're overlooked and sometimes feel like they're neglected. And I wonder if God isn't in that category sometimes. But here's Saul, and he was fine. He was doing okay until he heard this. Some singing and some dancing. He's like, yeah, the king is back. Here they come. All them pretty girls. They come and they're going to dance for me. Because you know why, don't you? Because I'm the king. That's why them pretty girls are going to dance. Because I'm the king. They're playing all that good music. You know why they're playing that good music? Because I'm the king. That's why. Right? I'm the king. That's why they're doing it. And then he heard the words. Saul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000s. Can I just tell you something changed? Something changed in the king's demeanor. Something changed in his step. He went from moving to, excuse me? Something happened in that moment. Something changed in their relationship because honor that he believed based on his position and place, the glory that he believed he was due based on his position and place, was given to someone that he did not think deserved it, but more importantly, He didn't get it. He lost it. Do you? And what I'm trying, the picture I'm trying to make is that it is a powerful thing in the Spirit. When we stop praising the things that we've been praising for 20 years and start returning our focus back to the one who died for us. Well, Pastor, I come and I sing every Sunday morning, and you're the one that picks the songs. I mean, you're the one that stands up there and sings. Go ahead. I heard you, Brother Harold. I heard you say that. Yeah. You're the one. But it's not the words that we're saying. It's the intent of our heart. It is whether or not we have decided within ourselves to bow low. It's not just the words that we say, but it is also the intent with which we live. Because our intent, I propose to you, and you tell me if I'm wrong. I'll handle it. I will. I'll handle it. But I propose to you that we have ripped from the pages of this word the concept and the idea, I must decrease. I'm good with him increasing as long as it don't cost me anything. When I went to the car dealership last week, I was like, come on, bring it on down, bring it on down, bring it on down, bring it on down, bring it on down. I want you to bring down the price that you're going to charge me. Bring it on down. Bring it on down. And he said, well, I can't bring it any farther. I said, then you bring up what you're going to give me for my car. He said, well, I'll think about it a little bit. Okay, I'll bring up what I can give you, but I can't bring down what I... But I didn't care which way it went because my bottom line still looked a little bit better. Do you understand what I'm talking about? But what we are coming into the house of God and doing, we're saying, God, breathe on us. God, move in us. God, make yourself larger. But at the same time, we have not made room for him. God, help me. Because I'm preaching to me just as much as to anybody else. In what ways have we made room for him? In what ways have we said, God, I will decrease? No, because honestly, isn't that enough? Haven't we said, well, you know, I'm here, but if I keep raising him higher, if I keep raising him higher, if I get on a step stool and I stand up on the chair and I raise him just a little bit higher, he's still higher, right? But there's no room because the ceiling has already been reached. This concept of limited good does exist in the kingdom of God in that as long as I am exalted, he cannot be exalted in my life. As long as my needs are more important. No. I'm good. I'll pray for the church, but I got to have mines first. Hear me, these are not easy words. I understand that. And I'm talking about a lot of stuff here. I'm talking about a mindset. I'm talking about a humility. I'm talking about a people who are willing to regain an understanding of what knee therapy is. A people who are willing to understand, who are willing to venture the loss of their own pride, the loss of their own self-respect, even in some cases, because there are moments in time where he just don't care. Not because he's unfair God, not because He is an unkind God, but because He understands that in order for Himself to increase, I must decrease. Because there is a limited capacity with which this happens. And as long as I am functioning up here, because I am doing so well, hear me, and I am so important to myself, He can never gain the true import that He desires in our lives and in this house and in this community. We ask, why do our children not have an experience with God? What have we sacrificed for our children? Why do... And I can go on. Basically, Jacob said, bless me. Esau came in and said, is there but one blessing? And Isaac, even though he was moved, even though he was upset, said, I'm sorry, son. There is but one blessing. Because there's not room for more than that. Tonight, the thought I want to leave you with, the idea that I want to share, the concept, the reason I went through all this limited good is that in the kingdom there is a continuum. There is that idea. But as long as I inflate what I have to have, He said, if I be lifted, think about it. I mean, again, just think about this other biblical example. He said, if I be lifted up, I'll draw all men unto me. But our idea is, well, I can lift Him up higher if I'm standing on the rooftop myself. He says, what you don't understand is, you lift me up higher when you're on your knees, on your face, before me. That is hard to get into this gray matter. Well, don't you want me to do well, God? Yeah. But not at the sacrifice of your blessing. Not at the sacrifice of the next generation, not at the sacrifice of the community. And the only way, I believe, that we will see what God wants when He looked into the portals of time. And I saw that tonight. When He looked into the portals of time and He looked into the future and He said, Terry, let there be, and there was, and He saw your destiny, and He saw your destiny, and He called you by name in that moment, and He created you. There has to be some give on our part. Father, I pray that You'll speak to our hearts, that You will help us to understand that You are all we need, that You are El Shaddai. And God, we've gotten so comfortable, we've gotten so excited about certain things, and even at times when we haven't understood that we are lifting ourselves up, or that we didn't have to decrease, that You would just keep increasing. But that wasn't the way You intended it. And I think we understand that because it's not working exactly as we thought it would all the time. Father, I pray that You will birth within us the desire, the hunger, that the flames of the Spirit of God will ignite, they will be fanned, that they will burn brightly, that they will overtake, overwhelm any other desires that are in our hearts, any other thoughts, any other things that we think are so important. Because God, we want You to increase. But that's not the only part. We want to also decrease. We willingly vow to You tonight, those who are of the same mind, we willingly vow tonight to find ways to allow Your Holy Spirit to chasten us, to quicken us, to move us, to speak to us, to teach us how to come low, not just to a low place, but how to decrease, how to look for other opportunities to raise Your banner, to raise Your kingdom, even when that means that our personal kingdom has to be lowered, even when that means that our own personal ideals, our own personal banners have to be taken down or lowered. Because Your kingdom come, not mine. Your will be done, not mine. In this earth, in my earth, as it is in heaven. There's a sweet, sweet